According to the 1951 Convention Relating to the Status of Refugees by the United Nations, a refugee is a person who, owing to the well-founded fear of being persecuted for reasons of race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group or political opinion, is outside the country of his nationality and is unable, or owing to such fear, is unwilling to avail himself of the protection of that country. Canada signed this convention, agreeing to be a safe haven for those people who fit this definition. Unfortunately, there continue to be people around the world who are seeking refugee status because of the persecution they face within their own countries. And the processes that exist to grant people refugee status are far from perfect in many nations, including Canada. I recently visited a medical clinic called Clinique Santé Accueil that exists within the CLSC Côte-des-Neiges in Montreal. The majority of the patients that use this clinic are refugee claimants in Montreal, and what you're about to hear are discussions I had with a number of the doctors that work at this clinic about the current refugee claimant process in Canada, as well as how this process has an effect on the health and well-being of refugees. Understand that this clinic is a bit different from other clinics and CLSCs in Montreal. Could you tell me a bit about what it is that makes this clinic unique?
The clinic is called the Clinique Santé Accueil, and it was started in 1984. So I started working there like 5 years after it started, and I've been working with the clinic ever since. So it's been now 16 years that I've been with the clinic, and at first we were at St. Luc Hospital in the Département de Santé Communautaire, and then in 1996 we were transferred from the St. Luc Hospital to CLSC Côte-des-Neiges, where we're working now.
Our mandate is different because we're not exactly first line primary health care. We're more of a referral clinic. Although we're all family physicians, we're not specialists, but we have a special orientation which makes us specific. So we're kind of, you know, general specialists or something like that, because we see only asylum seekers, so that makes us different. We have really a multidisciplinary approach to their problems. And because of our interest and experience with this specific population, we screen for problems that other practitioners wouldn't necessarily think of screening for, be it like mental disorders or tropical disease or, you know.
You used the word asylum seekers, and I was wondering if you could explain a bit about the different statuses of people who move to Canada from other countries, and about the different terms that are used to describe people who come to Canada.
Okay. I'm more familiar with the French terms, but I'm going to try and give the best translation possible. Asylum seekers are individuals who arrive to Canada by their own means and who claim for refugee status once they're here. So it's asylum seekers and refugee claimants, those are synonyms. And so their status is temporary until they've had a hearing, you know, a court hearing, and then which is a special federal court. They're not actually judges who work there, but commissioners. So their status is temporary, and if they're accepted, then they become residents, permanent residents to Canada. If they're refused, then you know, there's different possibilities, but you could say that after they've been refused, they remain, you know, asylum seekers or refugee claimants if they're still ongoing the process, trying to go through another administrative path to get status. Some of these will just go back to their country. Some will be deported because they want to stay, and some will fall into will become illegal, or how do you say clandestin?
You can say clandestine.
Yeah, clandestine. I prefer clandestine to illegal, but anyway. So that's the different, you know, there's like all these different kinds.
When someone asks for refugee status when they come to Canada, they are offered Programme Fédéral de Santé Intérimaire, the Federal Interim Health Program, right? which basically says we offer these people who are asking for refugee status, these asylum seekers, we offer them health services while their case is being studied. Because normally someone comes to the border and says, I'd like to be recognized as a refugee. The Canadian government says, fine, this can take some time. It'll usually take between 6 months to 12 months, maybe 18 months, to have your hearing in front of the immigration board where you can prove that to us. In the meantime, we're going to put you on this interim health program. So it's federally run. And it is universal in the sense that it is applicable in all provinces. But because it's federally run, it's logistically a little more complicated. For one thing, the asylum seekers who come to Quebec, they don't get the Sunshine Card. They don't get the RAMQ. They receive a paper, the PFSI paper, which says that they are eligible to for the federal health coverage. And with this paper, in theory, they can go to a clinic, a private clinic, a CLSC, a hospital, an emergency room, and get health care. There is a definition. The federal government has defined what these people are eligible for. It's generally considered emergency treatments, but it's a very wide range of, it's a wide definition of emergency. A woman's pap smear is not considered an emergency, but it is covered by the PFSI.
Okay, so for example, would refugee claimants have the same access to a family doctor as Canadian citizens would?
They would, if they are aware of what they can access with this paper, and if the family physicians they are going to see are aware of what this PFSI paper means. That's why I say theoretically they can go anywhere.
Okay.
In practice, say if in Ahuntsic there are not many refugee claimants, if one arrives there and goes to the CLSC for Ahuntsic, the doctors and the administrators and everyone can look at this paper and say, I don't know what this means. And often we will hear through our patients that they had been refused in private clinics, that they had been told that they had to pay for health coverage. Whereas to see a doctor, to be evaluated, there are no fees whatsoever with this paper. This clinic only sees people with this paper. So we have developed a certain expertise, not just at the clinical level of knowing what newly arrived immigrants need as health care or health screening, but administratively. We have people that know what to do with these papers, know how to send it off to Ottawa, because everything we do, I don't charge the Quebec government for the general exam I do on an asylum seeker. What I do is sent to the federal government, and the federal government sends the money back to the CLSC.
But basically, not all refugee claimants should necessarily come here. But if we judge that they should have follow-up here, then, we'll do a first screening, first visit, and then we'll either refer them elsewhere or, we'll decide to keep them here and we'll give them follow-up.
And who are the people that normally you keep here? Like, what would make a patient someone that you would want to keep here as opposed to referring them to another doctor?
Well, someone who has health problems, physical or mental health problems, mostly related to their immigration situation, because that's what makes us specific. So if the immigration process is making them sick, we have a special expertise, or if they have post-traumatic stress disorder related to violence, torture in their country of origin, then that would make it more likely that we would follow them up here also, because we have an expertise in mental health and we have a joint follow-up with social workers and psychologists.
You mentioned that you deal with patients for whom the immigration process has made them sick. How can you elaborate a bit on what that means?
Yeah, well, that's a bit
by immigrating.
Of course, that's a bit of a judgment call. The immigration process there is a very lengthy process, and for some people it goes well, but for some others, maybe they're just unlucky or they've been badly advised or whatever. But sometimes it takes years before they can have a hearing, and then if it doesn't go well and they're refused, then you know there's no real appeal procedure, but there's different procedures that you can go through, but which are also very lengthy and not necessarily appropriate, and just all these steps produce a lot of anxiety for our patients. And
maybe we could talk a bit more about this idea of the refugee process making people sick. Since this clinic deals exclusively with refugees, could you give a bit of your perspective of how or whether or not the refugee claimant process has an effect on the health of refugees?
First of all, just to be correct, the refugee claimants are our main clientele, but not exclusively. We also have other types of recently arrived immigrants. Most of them come from third world countries, but some of them sometimes are either visitors or students or landed immigrants, but who have trouble getting medical care. So our main criterion to take care of a patient is people who have difficulty having access to medical care in other health services. But you're right, the vast majority of our patients are refugee claimants. And I think the question is very pertinent, because I think working with this clientele, you cannot avoid the fact that the whole legal process of their acceptation or refusal as refugees is omnipresent in the way they are living through this period of time between the time when they first arrive and they ask for refugee status and the time when they are accepted as refugees by the refugee board.
Yeah, it is my feeling that the immigration process can have a negative impact on the health of my patients. I mean, I witness on an everyday basis situations that are some are unavoidable, and others are quite avoidable with a minimum of political awareness and political will. So,
well, can you give examples of the impacts on the patients?
Yeah. So, for example, for one thing, our patients are, due to their present situation, are most vulnerable to depression and anxiety, and so any delay whatsoever in the treatment of their requests is bound to have a negative impact on these problems, depression or anxiety, whether they were there before or they're created by, you know, the long wait before having a hearing in court or having an answer to their request. There's necessarily a negative impact. So, I think in a normal day, if I see 12 patients, you know, almost 50% of them will present symptoms of depression or anxiety, which are just exacerbated by the immigration process. So I figure that there's avoidable situations and unavoidable situations. Like, for example, I mean, just the fact of having to go to court and to tell your story when it's been very traumatizing can have a negative impact. We call it re-traumatization. You know, every time you have to tell your story, you kind of go through the same thing. And then, but that, I figure that's quite unavoidable, because they do have to tell their story. So I would say that, well, it's just the way things work, and you know, you have to have a hearing.
Are there certain things that are avoidable,
but
that cause harm to the health of your patients?
There are things that are avoidable. Avoidable that would be avoidable were the immigration officials aware of this situation. For example, One that's quite obvious is family separations, because, you know, once someone comes here as a refugee claimant, they have to be accepted before they can have their family come from abroad. And the whole process, I mean, before they're accepted, the delays are very long. It can take often more than 2 years. And then from that point, they have to request for the family to be brought. And it can take another 2 years or even longer before the whole family is reunited.
I think their health is mostly affected by their situation.
Like, what part, what do you mean when you say
well,
their
the
situation?
Fact that they're away from their usual social réseau, you know, their friends, their family. They're in a strange country with a strange language, cold weather, and very difficult for them to adapt to that. A lot of times, the refugee claimants, maybe contrary to what we could think, were at the upper spectrum of the social, you know, ladder. They were at the top of the ladder in their own country, because if they came here, they managed to get what, $3,000 for a plane ticket, whatever. How much money for a visa is very expensive, so they're not usually at the bottom of the ladder. So when they come here, they're on welfare. They make, what, $500 a month. They live in a tiny apartment. And the whole status issue is very important in those communities. And they lose all their status immediately. So that loss of status is difficult for them to accept. So that's tough. Also, what's tough, I would say, is that they're bored. They have nothing to do all day. It's
why don't they have anything to do?
Well, what do you want them to do? What would you do if you were transplanted to India and, you know?
Get a job?
Well, they don't have a working permit necessarily. Some of them do, but it takes a long time for them to get a working permit.
Why does it take so long? Is it just part of the process? Just takes a long time to get a working permit?
I would think. I mean, imagine that you need anything from the Quebec government. You know, it's not going to come instant.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
So when they don't have one, they can't work. And when they do get their work permit, who is going to hire them? They don't speak English. They don't speak French a lot of times. Their psychological health is not very good. Usually they're traumatized. So they have a hard time concentrating on anything. So, I mean, with, what is it, 9 or 10% of welfare unemployment in Quebec?
Is it refugees?
No, I mean general.
Okay.
You know, even for Quebecers,
mm-hmm,
born here, it's hard for them to fit in the workforce. Plus the fact that they are traumatized, you know, by definition. If they came here and they're refugee claimants, it's because they a lot of them had ill treatments in their own country. So there's a lot of sequelae from that. They have flashbacks, they have a hard time concentrating on anything. Usually a lot of them are depressed, they have body pains, they don't sleep at night. So it's very difficult for them to wake up at 6:30, take the metro and go to work. It's almost unthinkable. So it's survival, really.
If you ask me if the immigration process is has any effect on the health of the refugee, I think it's maybe one of the biggest stress they have. They have the stress and the anxiety and, you know, the sadness and about the people they left in their country. The family, the wife, the husband, the children, and everything, everybody. But I think the second stress, which is a different stress, is to arrive in a new country. So a lot of time they arrive here alone. A lot of time there are people who, some have education, but some other, they were farmers. So even they didn't go a lot out in the big cities, and they just arrive here in Montreal, and, you know, everything is quick, everything is complicated, everything is written, you have to, and the biggest stress is the hearing, because they know that the future is depending on the decision of the judge. And it's I have seen some persons, I saw them 1, 2, 3 times, and so long, I don't know if it's English is good, but more you see the hearing becoming soon, worse it is. And
when you say worse,
I mean anxiety and sleeping problem and the stress and eating problems and because they have to give all their story, to give all the story, that makes backflash, a flashback. That is one situation. They have to tell everything and to give all their story. And the second thing is the stress of the hearing itself, to prepare it. And I've seen some patients, they just can't. They just, they come here and they're in panic situation, and it's too much, the stress is too big for them. Because, they left a country where they have to deal with the police, they have to deal with the authorities, and all that. And they arrive here and they have the impression that they're still judge. They have to pass in front of the judge and as somebody who is wrong. And they have to prove that they're real refugee. And it's difficult to live inside. And the other thing for impact on the, it's when the process is too long. I've seen somebody this morning, 21 months, it's finished complete, he's accept, the family is coming. That's good. But we see sometimes people, it's 3, 4, 5 years, so long, we don't know why. They go in appeal, first appeal, second appeal, finally humanitarian reason. And it's so long that mentally, psychologically, it's so difficult, You're working here, you have time, some have time to get child or children here. They have a job, they're learning French, they're learning English, they pay tax, they pay income and everything, and they're still living in that big stress. And after, 4 or 5 years, they tell you, okay, no, you're not accept, you refuse. It's difficult, and the duration of that process, that is difficult to live. I've seen patients, they get depressed because it's too long. They're living on hope, but hope one morning, it's not enough.
Now, how much, maybe you can't answer this, but how much do you think the additional stress that the refugee claimant process may be affecting the health of your patients, and how much of it do you think was already a problem before they came? Mm-hmm.
Well, I very often ask that question to my clients, and I never get a clear answer to that, because I think in the experience of the refugee, those things cannot be separated. Meaning that we talk about post-traumatic stress disorder as the symptoms that those people experience, the traumatic memories of what happened to them that is coming back to them either in dreams or as flashbacks, and therefore this is causing either dissociation episodes when they don't know where they are anymore, and also provoking lapses in their memory of what happened and so on. But there is the fallacy in the term post-traumatic, because really, as they are coming to Canada, it's true that they are in one way protected and secure from the problems that they had in their country. But at the same time, because they don't know whether they're going to be able to stay or not, and what will be the decision, and therefore the threat of their having to go back is always present, and therefore they are still in the trauma experience, meaning that they cannot close that and say, okay, whatever happens, I know that I'm not going to be subjected to this torture or these traumatic events anymore, and therefore they are always in a situation where the threat is present, and the thing that can increase the level of anxiety related to that, obviously the legal process with the fact that they have to tell their story and explain all the details about the traumatic events, and sometimes the psychological evaluation that they have to go through to document this, and then the hearing itself, where they have to stand in front of a court, and also very often they feel like they are being treated like criminals. All of that is really part of this traumatic experience, and therefore they cannot separate the part that comes from the original traumatic event and the part that comes from the re-experiencing related to the legal process.
But would it be fair to say that the process does have an effect on their health?
Oh, well, then there is no question about that. I mean, you know, dealing with those people on a daily basis, you can see when they are coming to see you and their insomnia and their nightmares and their panic attacks are increasing. You know, you ask them when is your hearing, and 9 times out of 10 they tell you it's next month. And you know, very clearly, you see their situation improving for a while, and then when they get their letters telling them when they have to go for the hearing, and they have to start thinking about it and preparing for that, then the situation deteriorates again. So I think there is no doubt at all that there is a clear influence by the whole legal process on their health.
Are there changes that could be made to the refugee claimant process to make it a better process for your clients and to improve their situations?
Yeah, I think one of the most important thing is information, because they learn a lot from other people, and a lot of time it's not the exact information. For sure, experience of one can be transmitted to new arrivals, but they're working so much what they heard, and the neighbor and the other they met on the temple, and you know, they live so big anxiety just because of this, what they heard about. So if it would be possible for them to have information session, we do it for health, the YMCA, but maybe we just meet 5% of the new arrivals, because they're not all at the YMCA. Some other day with friends, family, and you know. But if it would be possible to give them the complete information and the real information. Mm-hmm. First, second, tat, and this, that's true, that's not true. And information to be clearer and okay. And the second thing would be if the process could be shorter. Hearing process, because we don't know why. There are some, it's on fast track, they accept, other it's so long.
Actually, I think Canada is probably one of the best countries to come if you're going to be a claimant. Because if you go to Australia, if you go to Europe, well, Europe, you're just not going to be accepted. They're going to send you right back on the next plane. If you go to the States, you're probably going to be put in a detention center, whereas here you're going to leave Dorval or whatever wherever you're coming, and you're going to be free to go find an apartment and live as a free, I guess, citizen. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to get welfare, which is, you know, it's hard to get by on welfare, but it's doable. So I don't think I would blame the government for the way that they are accepted initially. What I've noticed working here is the how the commission works, the commission that accepts refugees or refuses them, depending. They seem to have a strange attitude to refugee claimants. I'm not sure they see them as a positive force, as something that could eventually be a positive contribution to Canadian society. Their attitude mostly, I guess it depends on commission, different commissioners, but their attitude mostly seems to be, how can I maybe not get rid of, but how can I refuse this person? I'm gonna try very hard to refuse this person.
Have you seen many of your patients refused?
Yeah, a lot of them are refused. And I guess it's their job to either accept or refuse. I mean, not all claimants are true refugees by, you know, according to the Geneva Convention, so maybe they should be refused in some instances. But the way that the commission hears them out or doesn't hear them out, and the way that they use insignificant details in the claimant's story in order to refuse them is pretty shocking sometimes.
What would be the motivation for them to do that? Why?
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out right now. That's very interesting for us to know, because it affects my daily work. When you have a refugee claimant come back in your office, he's been refused. He's very worried. He doesn't know what he's going to do. To him or to her, going back to her or his country seems totally impossible. They're very scared of going back. They can't stay here, and they look to me for a solution. I have none. You know, I can't do anything. Prescribing some medication just seems totally ridiculous. Listening to them, I guess, can relieve partly the burden, but I mean, it's not going to solve their problem. So my work is very much influenced by this commission. And I've read a lot of rejections, and the way that they've been rejected, these claimants, seems inappropriate in my sense.
So you feel that that the inclination of the commission is to reject rather than accept refugees?
Well, you know what's strange is you take individual commissioners, and some will have a rate of acceptancy of 10%, and the next one will have a rate of acceptancy of 90%. So I think it should be more uniform. It means that individual notions of the commissioners seems to play a very important part in the fact that the claimants are refused or accepted. That shouldn't be the case. I mean, if you're on trial for, I don't know, murder or theft or whatever, all the judges should treat you the same way, right? That's why we have law books. That's why we have courts. That's why it's supposed to be. That's why we have a justice system. But concerning the refugees, there seems to be a lot of bias depending on who will be the commissioner.
Well, I think really the main type of problem that we face is the way the hearing procedure is going through, and this is very much dependent on the commissioner who is controlling the procedure. But I think that for a lot of commissioners, maybe because they are hearing so many stories, and therefore they can be affected by what we call compassion fatigue, meaning that you know, after hearing so many horror stories, you kind of build a wall to protect yourself against it, and you tell yourself that you don't want to hear anymore, and that anyways it's not possible that there are so many horror stories, and therefore people are making them up, and therefore a lot of commissioners develop kind of a skeptical attitude towards the refugees. And what that brings about is the fact that in their attitude with the refugees, they can become very, very aggressive or impressive, in the sense that, you know, those people very often, when they go for the hearing, they are very nervous and in a state of sometimes panic. And if they are confronted with somebody who shows them very clearly that he doesn't believe them or that he doesn't respect them, then this is going to increase their level of panic, and it becomes very difficult for them to testify properly. So there are lots of my patients who end up either not being able to testify, or doing it in a very poor fashion, and then the decision that is made by the judges is very much based on their own opinion about why the person is contradicting himself, or why he's making errors in the way he's testifying. You know, so often things which are the consequences of traumatic events, which has caused symptoms of lack of concentration or memory problems in the refugees, cause these problems in the way they are testifying, and this is very often interpreted by the commissioners as proof that they are lying. So I think this is probably the main problem, the way they are conducting the questionnaire during the hearing, and the way they are interacting with the refugees. I think if it was possible to set an environment for the hearing where the people would feel secure and would feel respected, and the attitude of the judges was more respectful, I'm sure that a lot of the problems could be resolved. I'm not even sure if the level of approval would be much higher, but I think the fact that they have to try to make a decision about the exactness of what happened to the refugees doesn't require that they have an aggressive attitude during the hearing.
One change that's actually written in the new immigration law and that hasn't been applied is the appeal. You may have heard recently the bar is going to court, is suing the government for not putting in place this appeal that they promised that they would put in place. The impact of this is that a refugee claimant goes to court in front of one commissioner, and if they're refused by this one individual, they have no way to appeal unless there has been a problem with the procedure within the case.
On December 1st, 2001, the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act was passed. This legislation replaced the former Immigration Act. The new legislation introduced four major reforms in the area of refugee protection, including the move to single-member panels from the previous two-member panels at the Refugee Protection Division. This division is responsible for making decisions regarding claims for refugee protection of persons in Canada. This change means that when refugees in Canada attend the hearing that will determine whether or not they are granted refugee status, one person now decides whether or not they fit the definition of a refugee. Another major reform in the area of refugee protection was to be the establishment of the Refugee Appeal Division. In order to ensure that fair decisions were being made by the one commissioner that sits on each of the Refugee Protection Division's panels, the Refugee Appeal Division was intended to decide appeals based on merit against decisions made concerning refugee claims. In April 2002, the government announced that the implementation of the Refugee Appeal Division would be delayed because of the high volumes of claims in the system and pressures related to the implementation of the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act. As a result, there is currently no refugee appeal division in place, although it is required by the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act. However, currently there are means of appeals for refugees through other channels, such as the federal court. If refugee claimants are denied official refugee status, they may apply for judicial review at the federal court level. But the best possible outcome of this appeal process does not grant the claimants refugee status, but gives them another hearing in front of another single-membered panel at the Refugee Appeal Division. In response to questions about whether or not the refugee claimant process can be fair and uphold Canada's domestic and international obligations without a refugee appeal division, the Citizenship and Immigration website of the Government of Canada says that, quote, "The Canadian system meets the requirements set out in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and international legal obligations, even without an appeal on merit. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees continues to describe Canada as an important country of asylum and resettlement, stating that Canadian policy and practice are often seen as setting the example for other countries. We are viewed as one of the most generous countries in the world in offering protection to those who arrive in Canada who are in need of it."
Have you seen changes in the refugee process since you've come here that have either had positive or negative effects on your clients? So have there been changes in the legal aspect of becoming a refugee in Canada?
Well, when I started, it was just the introduction of the Immigration Refugee Board. So this refugee board has been in action all the time since 1989. It was set up, as a matter of fact, to improve the way the refugee status of the claimants was decided, to avoid the arbitrary decisions of immigration agents who could make a decision on the basis of their own prejudices. And this refugee board is supposed to be neutral and independent. But unfortunately, what has become clear very quickly and has continued through all those years is that really the arbitrary aspect of the process has not been avoided with the refugee board, because instead of being now arbitrary decisions by immigration agents, it's arbitrary decisions by commissioners of the refugee board, because they are very arbitrary. Depending on the judge or the commissioner who is in charge of the case, you can have 90 or 95% chances of being accepted, or 90 or 95% chances of being refused, non regarding the content of your claim. So I think that this shows very well that it depends very much on who you meet the day of the hearing. And the other thing is that through the years there has been a progressive but steady decline in the percentage of the refugees that are accepted. I remember in the first years the percentage of people accepted was around 80% or 70%, and then it went down to about 50%, and it was around 50% for quite a long time, and now I think it's more around 40% of people being accepted. So there is less and less possibility for refugee claimants to be accepted.
And is this because there are more and more refugees and there are quotas? Or what reasons are there, do you think, that the number of refugees that's being accepted has decreased?
Well, I think that the general viewpoint of the immigration ministry, and with the different people who have been in charge of the ministry, but I think this is a pretty common point of view from all the people who have been in charge of the ministry all through those years, was that many of those refugee claimants are in fact disguised economic refugees rather than political refugees, and therefore that they are abusing the system, and that Canada should not favor this type of mechanism to bring people to Canada, but that they should rather try to decrease the number of refugee claimants who would come to Canada and be accepted, and rather favor refugees selected overseas in refugee camps or in the country itself, so that there is more of a possibility to verify that there are real refugees, quote unquote.
Since 2001, the rules are more strict, and we have to live with this. The control is more strict, and
You said immigration. Do you mean that has the refugee claimant process also become more strict since 2001?
Yeah. 2002, 2003. It was,
What changed? Do you know?
They have more questions. If they don't have any identity papers, if sometimes people they arrive and they go to a detention center.
Are there detention centers in Canada?
In Laval.
Okay.
If they just arrive here at the airport, they will go to the detention center as soon as they come out of the airport. And for them, it's passing from one prison jail to the other jail. You know, it's difficult. Sometimes maybe because there is suspicion, because they cannot give information or cannot answer to the question, or sometimes it's normal. Sometimes, you know, we say, okay, maybe it was too strict, but it's security. We don't manage security.
I think it's important also to see that the number of refugee claimants who are able to reach Canada and to arrive here is decreasing, especially since 2001.
Why since 2001?
Because the immigration authorities have used or have taken this opportunity of this threat on security for Canada as well as other countries to increase the severity of the control that they do at the point of departure. So in the airports, either in third world countries or in Europe, there is a lot more control, and people are being intercepted much more frequently. So that a lot of people who previously would have been able to go through Europe and arrive here, now are being stopped in Europe and they never reach here, and therefore the number of refugee claimants has decreased quite substantially from 2002. I don't have exact numbers, but just on the top of my head, I would say from around 30,000 that we had in 2002, and which was about the number that we had in the previous years, it came down to about 20,000 now.
That's the number of refugee claimants.
Claimants, yeah. And in Quebec, I know that it has come down from more than 10,000 to less than 5,000 now. So there has been a drastic cut in the number of people who have arrived here. And as I was saying before, then the percentage of people who are arriving here and who are making refugee claim who are accepted is decreasing also. So I think this is in the direction of what the immigration ministry has been wanting to do for all those years, and it's been an occasion to do it more effectively with this increase in the control for our security.
What do you feel is the motivation for Immigration Canada to want to decrease the number of refugees that are accepted? You said that it's something that they've wanted to do for a long time and that they've taken this opportunity to do it. What do you feel is the motivation behind that?
Well, as I was explaining before, I think it's their perception of those people as being false refugees, and therefore they want to increase the number of immigrants that Canada is going to select on the basis of what they believe is the interest of Canada, the type of immigrants that they want to have, more investors and people who have certain criteria as far as the level of education and type of professions, decrease those refugees that they are not able to select, but they have to take them as they come. So I think this is the main motivation behind that, which from my point of view is not a valid one, because I think that if you look at the demographic composition of the group of people coming as refugee claimants, I think they probably are maybe not as educated as the immigrants, but there are people with quite a good education, and a lot of them have a lot of potential and can be very, very, very positive addition to the Canadian society. But I think there is this misconception that they are as a group more here to take advantage of Canada rather than to bring improved wealth or value to Canada, and I think this is a wrong perception.
My opinion, this opinion is not necessarily shared by all of my colleagues, but I find that for many of these topics, it's just a question of dignity, and it's just so frustrating to have all these administrative barriers which prevent just these individuals to have an acceptable life. And also, you know, I wish we would recognize that these people are just going through the most difficult situations, and I find that we're just not treating them with dignity most of the time, and I think that's a great problem, and I wish that the Canadian public would know more about this, because I find that you know, if public opinion were to change, then we would be able to also change politically the way things are done.
If people are interested in finding out more about these issues, you said the public awareness is really important for changes to happen. If people wanted to find out more, do you know where they could turn to get information about these issues?
Well, one is the Canadian Council for Refugees, and that's the Canadian coalition that deals with these refugee issues. And there's a Quebec equivalent. It's in French, Table de Concertation pour les Réfugiés et Immigrants.
You just finished listening to a number of discussions I had recently with doctors who work at Clinique Santé Accueil, which is a clinic inside the CLSC Côte-des-Neiges in Montreal. The majority of people who use that clinic's services are refugee claimants, and I was talking with the doctors about the current refugee claimant process in Canada and how that process has an effect on the health and well-being of refugees. I'd like to thank very, very much the doctors that you just finished listening to, who were Marie-Jo Wimé, Gilles Denagerie, Pierre Dongy, Éric Daguerre, and René Petit for taking the time to speak with me. Also, like Marie-Jo said, if you want to find out more about refugee issues in Canada, you can visit the Canadian Council for Refugees website, which is www.web.net/squigglyline.ccr/. Or you can also go to the website of the Table de Concertation des Organismes au Service des Personnes Réfugiées et Immigrants, the TCRI. Their website is www.tcri.qc.ca. The music that was part of the track you just listened to was by Abaji from his album Oriental Voyage. Thanks for listening.